The sound of praise for your Sunday morning.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Introducing Reverend A.R. Bernard of the Christian Cultural Center.
Was the son of a preacher man.
And Rabbi Joseph Potasnik of Religion on the Line.
The only one who could ever teach me.
Now, on Talk Radio 77 WABC, here's the Reb and the Rabbi, where faith matters.
Good morning, I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend, we've gone from pandemic to pandemonium. And I'm just looking here at a statement from the family of George Floyd. And it says, looting and violence distract from the strength of our collective voice. And you don't honor a memory by these kinds of violent confrontations. So we're not talking about Floyd anymore. We're talking about, you know, unlawful protests. And that's sad because we should be talking about how to correct a situation that has that needs serious correction.
You know, look, this week in America, we witness the torture and murder of a black man right before our eyes, memorialized by video, social media, and it was done by a white police officer who represents a cancer in American social system. He represents maybe 1% of American law enforcement. And that's important to put that in perspective. The nation reacted, both with peaceful and violent protests. And I don't condone the violence, but Rabbi, I do understand the violence, because when change is necessary, failure to change becomes destructive. Frustration is a result of unresolved problems, unfulfilled needs. It's anger that builds up when you feel that something necessary is not being achieved. It's wrong, the looting. It is wrong, the vandalism. But at the same time, I understand this pent-up frustration. What is beautiful to me is that for the first time in a long time in our nation, there's a national consensus of outrage. It is not just one side of the political aisle. It is not just black, white. It's a coming together, a collective outrage of the nation against something that needs to change.
Reverend,
I know I'm preaching right now, but that's what we do, right?
Look, I understand the anger. I understand the outrage. But freedom comes with responsibility. And we're not going to seriously address the problem if we have people who are bent on destruction. And I see last night graffiti on St. Patrick's, graffiti on a synagogue in L.A. We don't really confront the challenge that we need to address if we're going to be sidetracked, if we're going to spend our time talking about lawlessness with people who I don't think want to address the problem. There's a way to do this.
There are people who are good.
Yeah, look, 99% are good. We respect police. We admire those who are ready to give their lives to protect us. But this kind of behavior is so irresponsible. Today is Pentecost. We finished Pentecost Saturday evening. It's about law. Freedom comes with law. And that's why I say we need to look at the problem in a constructive fashion, not a destructive fashion. And when we have this destruction, we're not talking about, you know, remembering George Floyd as his family wants him remembered. And that to me is tragic.
It is tragic. It is. I agree wholeheartedly, but I understand both sides. You know, look, we're both products of the 60s. I was involved in some of the protests that took place back in the 60s on racial injustice, racial inequity, the war in Vietnam. I mean, the 60s was a decade of protests and revolution. But I understand this pent-up frustration. But now you say, graffiti where? On St. Patrick's. What does St. Patrick represent? The institution of religion. What is being said? It has failed us. The burning of the precinct, what is it saying? It symbolizes law and order that has failed us. So these people are doing what they're doing wrongly, absolutely, and they should suffer the penalty of looting, of vandalism, of destruction of property. But the overall picture, the bigger picture, I understand where they are coming from, Rabbi. You know, there's a wonderful passage in the Hebrew Scriptures, Proverbs chapter 13, verse 12, in our Bible, and it says, "Hope deferred makes the heart sick." And you tell me, it's a Hebrew word, hala, right? H-A-L-A. And it's not just disease. It means to have your patience and your tolerance exhausted. And that's where we are. We're suffering from a deferral of hope. And
look,
we want change.
Our respective faiths respect protest. The Bible talks about protest. Moses, Jesus, they were protested. They protested. But there has to be a way to do this right. If we're serious about change, then I think people have to really examine the path to correction. And this is not the path. The family is begging for people to stop doing this. If we really care about the memory of George Floyd, and that was a horrific video, but you don't honor that. You don't respect who he was and what he represented to his family, to his community, by this kind of repulsive and revulsive behavior.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page.
It's wrong. I'm angry by people who do this because it is going on a path that will get us to the wrong place, not the right place. And I think clergy have a responsibility here. Freedom comes with responsibility, and our responsibility is to address this frontally in a way that brings change to our country. And by the way, police agree with that.
Yeah,
you know, there's a statement by the National Association of Police that we have to examine internally what we're doing. So all of us who really care are developing a relationship, a partnership that will ultimately, hopefully, make a difference.
And look, and that's what I said at the beginning of the program. There's a national consensus of outrage. Everybody is upset about this, and you're absolutely right. Look, evil traffics in injustice, chaos, and deceit. We've got to pray, and we've got to stand for truth, for justice, and order, because change is not going to come. Look, this violence and this kind of stuff becomes the catalyst for change, but it doesn't bring about change. Change happens when we sit down and we reasonably discuss
so
the issues.
We need to get,
and we make the difference.
We need to get the country back on the right track, not on the track we're traveling. We've come to the end of this segment, and we got another segment talking about how we're going to begin to pray again in houses of worship. So this is a busy morning for us.
Yes, absolutely. We've got some incredible guests, two doctors, and by the way, Rabbi, they're mine.
We'll see about that. All right. Stay tuned.
We'll be back.
Where faith matters. The Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potastic.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard. And Rabbi, we have some incredible guests with us. This ongoing conversation about COVID, reopening, reentry, restart, whatever we want to call it, especially with houses of worship. And these two gentlemen, actually part of my congregation. So I want you to know, they're two of mine today. Okay?
Rabbi, well, you know, I mentioned to you before we went on, they both have the title doctor. So I have to believe somewhere they belong to my people too.
You know, you can get away with that.
We got to check their family trees. We'll find some Jewish blood there. Yeah.
So we're welcoming to the program Dr. Joseph Sherrill, and he is the Assistant Medical Director of Emergency Medicine at St. Joseph's Hospital in Bethpage, New York. And along with him, Dr. Donald S. Matheson, and he is a site director of obstetrical patient safety officers at New York University Langone in Brooklyn. This is their Brooklyn branch of that, New York Langone. So, gentlemen, thank you for being with us on the Rev and the Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So I guess we want to start with just the two of you weighing in. What has this COVID experience been like for you as doctors? Joe, you're in the ER, and Dr. Matheson, obstetrics, so you're dealing with deliveries and birthing at a time like this. Let's start with you, Dr. Joe.
Oh, great. So very new experience for us in the emergency department, as you can tell with the constantly changing treatment programs that we're using, the changing of the restrictions that we're advertising for patients. This has been very different for us. We haven't seen a virus like this in my lifetime, at least. The initial wave was scary, and we had a lot of sick patients that had some bad outcomes. But over the past several weeks, we've kind of altered our treatment protocols, and we've seen a lot of successes. And now with the quarantining that's been going on for the past several weeks, we've seen a marked decrease in new cases and cases that are actually sick. So it's looking good right now.
So the quarantine is working, you say?
It appears to be working. I mean, we've seen our numbers drop precipitously over the last several weeks, and I'm attributing it to quarantining and self-awareness with the masks and social distancing.
Yeah, people practicing discipline in terms of how they're interacting with other people. Dr. Matheson, how about you in the delivery room?
Well, for us in the delivery room, I think initially we were a little, it was definitely concerning because we started to see some patients early on coming in and protocols or precautions were not set. So we were seeing some patients coming in, traveling from out of the country and, you know, pregnant, in labor, in respiratory distress. But as time went on, and as Dr. Joe said, our policies were changing on a daily basis, sometimes twice in a day, you know, which mask we should wear. And especially with us, you know, with patients in labor, you know, should we wear, you know, N95 when a patient is pushing? And up to now, we don't have a lot of answers, but things are improving, definitely.
Now, were you concerned because in the beginning they were saying that this disease really doesn't affect children or young people? It's only affecting the elderly, those with pre-existing conditions. And all of a sudden we find that that's not the story.
Yeah, I was concerned because it medically it made no sense. We understand that there's some differences, age differences, you know, with and with medical comorbidities that some people were more prone, but for children to be totally out of it, I think we were looking at the right thing for in children, and now we're seeing these multi-system effects of the COVID on children. So I think, you know, that makes sense now.
Rabbi, doctors, I'd like to jump in here.
Yep. Thank you so much. Doctors, firstly, let me say thank you to you for, you know, sparing a little bit of time with us today, because I know you're overextended in terms of commitments. We have a real challenge in the faith communities. I was telling Reverend Bernard, I saw this quotation that says, "Oh God, grant me patience, but do it in a hurry." And I find there are some in the community that's saying, let's have patience. Let's not rush back to re-enter our faith sanctuaries. And there are others who are saying, you know what, it's time already. We've been away for a while. We need to get the community back together. How do you reconcile? You have two opposing views, so to speak. Everybody says they're concerned about the health of the individual. But my own thinking is, and correct me if I'm wrong, if I'm going to make a choice, I'm going to err on the side of caution here and go very slowly until we better understand what the consequences are, because we've seen where people hastily return and, you know, the deleterious impact it has.
Do you want me to respond first?
Go ahead.
I absolutely agree. And in speaking with Pastor before, I am also I'm cautious with the re-entry of this. I was just listening to someone, you know, it's what are we balancing with re-entry? As you said, we're balancing lives and possibly on the other end, our economy. I heard someone say, you know, our economy could rebound at any point, but we cannot replace lives. And I agree with Pastor Bernard that, you know, we should be very cautious on
Dr. the you and I, yeah, Dr. Matheson, you and I talked about, you know, a congregation of thousands like our congregation. You know, how do we control that reentry? People coming in, do we take their temperature at the door before they come in? Is there some type of equipment we have to invest in that can check them? And you know, processing 4,000 people for each service and then having a transition of having to disinfect, does that make sense? Is that practical?
And people of different ages.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I am concerned. There's different types of technology. Plus, we have to use our vital signs, temperature, and the technology that is used. We have to be careful with whether some of it may invade privacy of some of the parishioners. So I think we have to be careful on what. You know, especially when we're talking thousands, I think it's an ominous task. I agree.
So, one of the things that I'm trying to understand, I've been asked this by members of the clergy, is you have the number 10 in New York, congregate worship no more than 10, including staff. In other places, other parts of the country, neighboring states, 25, 50. And What is the number based on? How do we select a number 10? How do we select a number 25? Is there any scientific correlation to those numbers?
Dr. Joe has the answer for that, Rabbi. He knows.
Okay.
I would love to have a real scientific answer for that. I don't know where that number is particularly coming from. I mean, if you want to do the math and say if you have a facility that holds 10 people, and each person has to be at least 6 feet away from each other. You could do the math and come to an equation. But a blanket statement of 10 people in congregation, I don't know how that number has come about. It seems a bit arbitrary at this time to me. I don't know, Dr. Matheson, do you have any?
Yeah, and when people hear the discrepancies, they say, well, wait a minute, if you don't know, then what are we supposed to do? How do we have faith in the directive if it's not presented in some kind of logical way?
All right, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned, more of The Rev and the Rabbi.
The Rev and the Rabbi skillfully unites religions, faiths, and all people into the most compelling and thought-provoking dialogue each week. Hosted by internationally esteemed pastor, Reverend A.R. Bernard, and renowned rabbi, Joe Potasnik, The Rev and the Rabbi invites everyone from various professional backgrounds and platforms to join the conversation as they discuss how faith fits into our everyday lives.
Welcome back to The Rev and the Rabbi. I'm Rabbi Joseph Potasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Well, I think the 10 is logical. I think it comes from the heavy influence of the Jewish synagogues, Rabbi. Isn't it true? It takes 10 families to start up a synagogue, right? We got that from you.
It's a quorum. It's a quorum for a public
exactly.
service.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, you know, and we appreciate that. But again, I still say, and Christian, Jewish, Muslim tradition, saving life is of paramount value. Nothing matters more. In Jewish tradition, for example, if it's the Sabbath, the holiest day of the week, you can, you know, treat the Sabbath as a weekday if it comes to saving life. That's how important life is. There's nothing that, you know, is of greater value. So I'm really concerned with those who have this urge or this yearning to get back. I appreciate that, but when you're talking about health, let's walk very slowly here.
And there's so many variables, so many unanswered questions that we're still trying to work our way through. Rabbi, I had doctors on with an interview with me that were playing on our website just to inform our congregation about this. And I was sharing with Dr. Joe and Dr. Donald that we set up a COVID test site for a week at Christian Cultural Center. We partnered with Northwell Health and the state of New York, and they were testing for COVID, first of all, and then they were testing for COVID antibody. We had over 1,000 people show up, which, you know, was important because, you know, Brooklyn was one of the epicenters of the virus, and we didn't have enough testing sites. But Dr. Joe was saying that the antibody testing doesn't necessarily say right. that you didn't have it. Dr. Joe, can you speak to that?
Well, the antibody testing can give us a clue to say if you were exposed to the virus or not. It tells if your body has kind of made some reactive proteins in the system. It does not mean that you're immune to the virus going forward. It does not mean that you are unable of getting an infection and reinfecting another person. So I think using the antibody test alone to designate if a patient or a client should be able to return to work or to a service, I think that would be wrong to do at this point until we get some more concrete evidence that the antibody testing is working appropriately.
So in your opinion, Doc, I'm just curious, if you had the antibodies present, if you've had COVID, you went through, mm-hmm. you know, and you have the antibodies present, does that mean that you're now immune to COVID? You can't get it again, this particular virus?
No, there is no scientific evidence that you cannot be reinfected. Wow. The only good thing that's coming about with this antibody testing, we are able to use patients that have positive antibodies in treating other patients that come down with the infection in a treatment called convalescent treatment. So that's sometimes promising in its effects. But as far as your inability to be reinfected with the virus, I don't think that there's any science out there that says that cannot happen.
Dr. Matheson, do you concur?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, with Dr. Joe, at this point, what we need is time. We to see what happens with the people with the antibodies, and we don't know what's going to happen in the future. So, hence, once again, our precaution as far as reopening, it should not be used as the individual. I mean, I think some people are looking at the passport business, where you look at the test, the antibody, and things are going to be coming out where you have to show a pass to go back to work, to travel,
right. Rabbi?
Yeah, I'm curious. Someone asked me this question, and Rev and I have talked about it as well. Supermarkets. I see where more people walk into a supermarket than are permitted to walk into a sanctuary with the 10 ruling. And someone said to me, well, if you can go into a supermarket and have 50 people or plus there, why can't you do that in a sanctuary? And I heard, and I don't know if this is so, that being stationary, sitting in one position is more dangerous in terms of contracting the virus than walking around as you would in a supermarket. Is there any truth to that?
I don't recall seeing anything scientific as far as movement or anything like that that affects the droplet spread. So unless Dr. Joe knows something concerning that.
No, I agree with Dr. Matt. I've not heard that being true. I think being mobile would be able to spread the virus more than sitting still. I don't know if there's any truth to that.
Yeah, Rabbi, you brought up a good point there because, and this is anecdotal, because there was a church in Washington, D.C. that was going through the preparation for reopening, and they had a choir rehearsal. 60 choir members got together and they practiced 6 feet apart and they were singing. And in rehearsal, then they broke up into smaller groups, then came back together. And this was 2.5 hours that they spent with each other. And 2 weeks later, all right, there was a outbreak of COVID. Someone got it. And 45 people coming out of that rehearsal ended up with COVID. And they talked about something called the physics of fluid. In other words, your saliva droplets and how far they go when you cough or having a regular conversation with 6 feet is good. But if you're singing, if you're projecting, if you're a praise and worship leader in our church or a cantor in the Jewish synagogue or something like that, and you're projecting, that's going to go, they say, 18 feet. Are you aware of this so-called I call it the physics of spit, but they call it the physics of fluid. is there any truth to this, Doc, in your knowledge?
I think that I think there is some truth to that. As we know, when patients or people cough, they expel the virus further than just talking. And the same thing when you sing and you're projecting your voice, if you're expecting people at the back of the house of worship to hear your voice, you're projecting as far as you can. So I think there's going to be saliva that's going to be carried with that force. So yes, I don't know if the exact number is 18 feet, 14 feet, but there's definitely, I would expect there to be more chance of infection when you're speaking or projecting.
In New York, it's now 6 feet, of course, is the standard, but 12 feet when they're singing. So you see, Reverend, if we cut out the singing, we have a shorter service. A lot of people be in favor of this, right?
But, hey, some people come just for the singing. You know that.
You always cut the sermon. Just have give us the singing. But you know what that shows? You know, I know in Jewish tradition, one of the greatest compliments you could give someone is to say, you're a wise student. And I think, as Doctor said to us before we went on the air, we're learning. We're always learning. Nobody has all the answers. And that's why this has been very, very impactful in our thinking, that we have to take a moment and see, you know, what we know and what we don't know. And there's no shame in saying, I don't know.
I agree. There's a lot we don't know. And I'd rather learn on the conservative side than on the risking side.
Well, Doc, you know, that both of you, you know, I had this conversation with you, and, you know, our church members are wondering when we're going to return. And I will tell you from the feedback that we've gotten, the consensus is nobody's in a hurry to go back into the building. They're enjoying the online experience. So, you know, when we return, you know, whenever that may be, I don't think it's going to be one or the other anymore. I think it's going to be a combination of the two, to give people the experience that they're enjoying now and remember when we gathered in the building. Rabbi?
You know, you made a good point, Reverend, the other day with a cardinal, and that is that millennials approach this virtual experience with a different lens. You know, for them, this has become part of their familiar territory. Older people saying, wait a minute, I need that face-to-face. So this is going to be a learning curve for us. But what I wanted to ask the doctor is, I saw recently a video. It was a company called Med in Box, where they filmed the surgery. You know, you see surgery being done virtually, and this becomes a way of teaching students. So this virtual, you know, technology, is this something that we're going to see more of in the medical arena as well?
That's a good question.
We've been using medical simulation labs for several years now. I think, Dr. Madsen, we would agree. Technology has come a long way. We have mannequins that are not like the Annie dummies from CPR classes of, you know, decades ago. These mannequins look like humans. They have the ability to bleed. They have ability to make noises. It's pretty impressive. So we've been using some sort of virtual reality to train physicians. That being said, I don't think there's any true replacement for physically working on a human body. But in this case, where we need to social distance, I think it's appropriate to use these sort of teaching methods right now.
I agree. I think that's one of the things that we're using right now, and you may have heard as far as the robotic surgery that is going on now. And right now, I mean, it's robotic surgery and all that training can actually be done outside of the room, and the surgeon does not necessarily have to be in the room as long as his case is set up appropriately with the people. So I think I see a lot of this virtual teaching and operating as the next step as far as where we're going with the new normal in medicine.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, Rabbi, go ahead, because I have conversation.
I see grandparents who now have become Zoom experts. People who didn't know what Zoom was a few months ago are now communicating with family. And So this condition, this pandemic, as horrible as it has been, has a little bit of a blessing in it, and it has forced us to look at our inner our resources and say, how can we now be part of, you know, the ongoing conversation? And I think in that sense, we've come to appreciate technology rather than in some cases have a phobia. Nah, that's not for me. That's for young people. I think that mentality has changed.
I think absolutely, Rabbi, you're correct. And the world is a different place, and it's going to be a new normal with the use of this technology. But let's get into a hard conversation here. You're two medical individuals, all right? So you know about the human body, how everything functions. This past week, all right, the nation has been in an uproar. We've had rioting in Minnesota. It depends on what station you watch. CNN calls it protests. Fox calls it rioting. People have reacted to this horrific video of a police officer. Let me just say, I support our police officers, our law enforcement, our firefighters, okay? They are so imperative to our society to keeping peace. And for the most part, these men and women put their lives on the line. But we do have individuals throughout time who abuse their power. So there is this video image of a police officer holding his knee and part of his shin on the neck of George Floyd while he's down. He's face down. His face is on the concrete. Back is turned. And this is going on for 18 some say 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes, but it's a long period of time. And I know that carotid artery is one that we use in martial arts that, you know, you could put someone out, put them in a chokehold. It stops the oxygen flow to the brain and they're out. And I know this is a long introduction to this question, but I want to give kudos to Sean Hannity because this week when he covered it, you know, he called it what it is. I mean, he talked about it from his own perspective. Doc, weigh in on that. You know, just that whole idea of putting that kind of pressure on a person's neck in that position. All right. Does that ultimately lead to death?
Any decrease in blood flow to the brain is going to cause an issue. Whether it's the lower end of the spectrum where it's a blackout episode or a seizure or a stroke, or if it's there long enough, obviously, just like a stroke could cause death, yes, lack of blood flow and oxygen to the brain can be fatal.
Dr. Matheson?
I heard of the issue. I kind of held back until actually last night, and I actually looked at it, and it was heart-wrenching to look at it. And I mean, I looked at some of the, you know, the movement after the knee was removed, and I'm looking at a limp person, and my concern is nothing was done. And I agree with Dr. Joe. You withhold, you know, oxygen, blood flow to the brain. I mean, I see this with, you know, with babies and you know, if we have a stat C-section when the cord is prolapsed and the baby is not getting any blood flow, that could be horrendous, even in, you know, when we're running down the hallway to try and get this baby out. So I think I totally agree that, I mean, this is, it's a little tough, I mean, to observe.
I would just add, anyone who sees that video, regardless of that person's belief or background, has to be sickened by what is being shown, what is being done to that individual. I mean, there has to be a moral outrage. And what I am heartened is that we've seen the reaction on both sides of the aisle, both sides, you know, of the racial divide. Everybody looks at that and says, how could that be? How can you do that when someone's crying out, I can't breathe, and you're still doing it, and everybody's, you know, the other officers are standing by and watching?
You just said something important, both sides of the aisle. You know, I guess the nation has built up, you know, to a point now after seeing so many incidents similar to this where there is an abuse of power by an individual, because that's what it boils down to. And we have to talk about police policy, because policy allows police officers to restrain, you know, and the knee down on a person's back is part of policy. So we have to really review those policies. But at the end of the day, it's discretion in how force is used. I mean, you guys in your profession as doctors have to use discretion on a daily basis, person by person, in terms of how you apply your knowledge, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So here we are with a police officer. You know, you've got that badge, you've got that you know, that firearm. There has to be a degree of discretion in how you apply, you know, your authority. Rabbi?
Look, we always talk about having a national conversation. I've been on radio for 38 years, and we talked about racism when I started. We're still talking about racism now. It has to stop. But it won't stop until we start talking seriously to one another about steps that need to be taken. Rev, we come to the end of the segment. I just want to thank the doctors, but thank you, Rev, because you were the one who introduced them to me. And I learned years ago, my parents taught me, as I'm sure they taught you, surround yourself with smart people and you'll learn a lot. Surround yourself with people like this and you walk away and say, you know, I know a little bit more than when I began the conversation. So thank
you
so much.
Well, I will tell you, Rabbi, they are a credit not only to their profession, but they are a credit to their faith. They're just strong practitioners and believers in God and faith, and that comes into play in everything that they do. Dr. Matheson, Dr. Sherrill, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the Reverend the Rabbi with us this morning.
I only want to see you outside the hospital. I don't want to see you inside. Outside the hospital, gladly meet you.
All right.
Stay safe
and be well.
Maybe the obstetrics, but not the emergency care.
No problem. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
And stay tuned. We'll be right back with more of the Rev and the Rabbi.
Reverend A.R. Bernard, Rabbi Joseph Pachasnik, the Rev and the Rabbi. Talk Radio 77 WABC and the all-new WABCRadio.com.
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Joseph Pachasnik.
And I'm Reverend A.R. Bernard.
Reverend,
great conversation.
I have to say also, at some point, faith, medicine, doctors, clergy, we all have to talk to each other. You know, I think for too long we operate in these separate enclaves, and especially now with this pandemic, we need to hear from the other. What are your concerns? What are your needs? And what are yours? And then we'll arrive at constructive solutions. So it was really a pleasure to speak to them.
Absolutely. And I will tell you, I've known these individuals and their families. I mean, Dr. Matheson's son grew up, I'm sorry, his daughter and family grew up in our church and married one of our immediate people. And then they had children. So I'm looking at three generations of people who have adhered to their faith, practiced that faith, even in the context of their profession. And it's true also with Dr. Joe and his wonderful family.
Well, it's nice to see people with that degree of commitment to faith also have that commitment to humanity, because the synthesis is extremely important and certainly beneficial to the patients. So we'll get to a better place when we have these kinds of civil conversations instead of imposing our thinking on the other because we think we know more.
You know, you pointed that out, and I think it's so important because too often, it doesn't matter what color, what faith you are, people are people. It's a human thing that you can be successful in life and then develop a certain arrogance about yourself. And it was great that you pointed out their humility because that is so true about them throughout the time that I've known them. And too often we have people who are successful in what they do, and yet there is this air of arrogance about them that is a turnoff. Humility is so important.
You know, when you're in school before the exam, God, please get me through this and I will do the following. Then later on when you become successful, you begin to look at, well, it's as the Bible says, it's my knowledge and my thinking and my brilliance that got me to this place. All of a sudden, God is removed from the picture. So it's nice to see people retain that.
You're hitting on one of my favorite verses in Deuteronomy, in our Hebrew scriptures. There, our Hebrew scriptures. Do you hear me say that? Huh? That you shall remember it's the Lord God who gave you power to be successful and to get wealth. That's it. Unless you say that it's you. You've done it yourself. Absolutely. That is so
important. All right. All right. Next week, with God's help, we'll be back.
Yeah, amen to another show of the Reverend the Rabbi. God bless.
Thank you.